God started softening my heart, and then I ended up coming clean of my affair while I lived in Denver. A pivotal moment that I talk about the intro chapter of the book, where I just I heard this, what felt like audible to me is, you need to come clean of your affair. And obviously that became an argument between me and God, but eventually I heard, you need to hand over your story for a greater story. And at the time I didn't know what that meant. I kind of thought maybe what it meant, but I know what it means now. By me being vulnerable, being open, sharing my testimony, it's all to help move others forward.
Welcome to the Empowered Manhood Podcast, where men rediscover courageous masculinity. Pull up a chair as we gain strength from the stories of God working in the lives of ordinary men today. These men have discovered that in a world of superficiality and isolation, we need authentic brotherhood to gain strength for the battles we face every day. Brought to you by the ministry of CLC, which challenges men to an uncommon pursuit of Christ. Welcome to Empowered Manhood. Welcome back to the Empowered Manhood Podcast, where men are rediscovering courageous masculinity in the light of the gospel. My name is Mike Hatch, and I serve as the National Relationship Generator for CLC, and I'm here, as usual, with Chris Bullinger, author and speaker, author of the best-selling men's devotional, Daily Strength for Men. So here's a question for you. How are you feeling about your work-life balance these days? I know for me, working from home has actually made it a little harder to disengage from work and really focus on my family. And maybe that's something you relate to as well. Maybe that's not you. Maybe you are working at an office somewhere. But I don't care who you are. As a guy, it is so easy to find our identity in work and sacrifice time spent or focus and attention spent on our families for our work. And our guest today, Corey Carlson, who is an executive coach, he is an author and a speaker, and he wrote the book, Win at Home First, an inspirational guide to work-life balance. He knows the way we feel about this. He understands our struggle. He's been there before. As a matter of fact, he would say that he lost at home first before he won at home. And Corey, guys, Corey is the real deal, okay? You're going to hear his story, and he's going to get raw. He's going to get, just like, you know, we value in CLC, he is going to get absolutely real and raw with you today and tell you some things that are really hard to share, I think, but will be very encouraging for us. Corey talks about some wounding messages he received when he was young that eventually led him to find his identity primarily in work, which became a slippery slope that led to an affair. And his story of how that came to light is really incredible. And then we go on to talk about the book, of course, and there is this really cool thing I'm looking forward to you to hear about, the hearing-doing matrix, which we dive into a little bit more in the from the book, and it's based on the Beatitudes, and I think you guys are going to find it really applicable. So if you don't already, grab a pad of paper, grab a pen, get ready to take some notes, and definitely go check out Corey's book, Win at Home First, an inspirational guide to work-life balance. So here is our interview with Corey Carlson. Hey, Corey Carlson, welcome to the Empowered Manhood Podcast, man. It's great to have you.
Well, thank you very much for having me here. It's great to see you again. And I enjoyed our first conversation and very excited to talk to you today and also with you today, Chris.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. We're excited to talk to you. And so, as I mentioned in the first part of this podcast, my intro, you wrote the book, Win Home at First, or excuse me, Win at Home First. That's hilarious how I read that. So we're excited to dive into that, to that book and your experiences that have led you to write that book. And there's so much in this, I think. And by the way, the subtitle is An Inspirational Guide to Work-Life Balance. If there's anything that men can understand, it is the struggle with work-life balance. And Corey, I know, you know what God has been doing in and through and in your heart, in your life, and your family has kind of birthed this. And so I'm excited to hear more of your story. And as we do with all of our guests, we would love for you to share at first your fence post story. And again, for those who are listening, maybe for the first time, that just you think of a fence along a property and every vertical post representing a significant moment in your life or a significant person in your life who's impacted you and contributed to who you are today. And so normally in our CLC groups, these stories can take an hour. We're not looking for that necessarily, Corey. You're not under the gun for an hour. But if you could give us a few fence posts to give us a little bit of an idea of who you are and your background, that would be amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I like this exercise. One from a macro level, almost, you know, hit three of like the big ones or five. And then I could do all kinds of fence posts for these other parts that have helped shape and mold me, and God's used it to build my character. If I was to think of, you know, the big ones, and I think the first one would be in high school when my mom died from breast cancer. And it was a 7-year battle. There were good days during that time too. I'm very blessed to grow up in just an incredible family, but you know, losing your mom, you know, 15, 16 years old at those years is a pivotal time. And I mean, there's so many lessons learned out of it, but part of the shaping piece of me is, you know, kind of realizing, hey, life is short. So, be intentional with a lot, you know. Sometimes during my time, I've forgotten that a little bit, but I think that's definitely came back up this last decade for sure, as I've been intentional about the way I'm trying to live my life and, lead family and other leaders. But another part of that story with my mom passing, and still kind of shapes me today, and the devil will use it against me at times. In the standpoint, my dad during that time had some bouts with unemployment. At the same time, medical insurances, you know, hitting, and you know, so what ends up happening is this: you know, college savings that my parents had set aside depleted, and as it comes time for college, there were no resources. I mean, thank goodness for some scholarships and lots of student loans. I was able to go to college. But the lie that I kept hearing, well, you know, the devil was saying, and I was starting to hear and make agreements with, is I would hear this phrase, "You're on your own." And so not true, but that's what I was believing. So I'm on my own, man. Hey, I've got to go get, you know, the loans and the scholarship, and I got to hustle. I mean, if I'm going to do anything with my life, it's up to me. And as interesting as I was kind of, I've heard it's on me many, many times throughout my life. I'm an Enneagram 3 for any of the listeners that are Enneagram 3. That's the achiever. You give me a to-do list, I'm going to get it done. Some of that's healthy.
Yeah.
Some of that's not healthy. It's back to that hustle mentality. It's all on me. Provision to this day, I've got on my wall, I had a custom wood sign made, "You're mine and not mine," based off the parable of 10 minas. This idea of, if you know, that we've familiar with the parable of 10 minas or the parable of the talents. But the difference between those two parables is the word that they choose to use. In the parable of the talents, it's look what I did with the money. I took the talents and I doubled them. And then, but the shift is in the parable of the 10 minas, is look what your mina did. And then you can see through the parables that the master rewards the mina people with cities and not just more money. So there's more responsibility that came. And so I have that on my wall to remind me of that posture of the money, because I still to this day can hear that lie, "You're all on your own." But as I wrote the book and I started talking to my dad, I went back to say, I've heard this lie, "You're all on your own." And my dad said, "Do you realize that when your mom died," "do you realize that when mom died, the church paid for our mortgage for a year?"
Wow. Oh my gosh.
I was like, "No, I didn't. I had no idea."
Oh my gosh.
And so the point being is I wasn't alone.
Wow.
Do I wish I would have known that sooner? Absolutely. Why did I not? You know, I don't know. I think probably because my, you know, who knows why? I mean, but I found out now. And so I think that was a big fence post that one, the event happens right when I'm 15, 16, but heck, I'm still pulling out all kinds of wisdom and learnings from that moment that God is my provider. I'm not. And I need to steward the resources that I've been given and move forward. So that was a huge, huge one in my life.
Wow.
I think another big one is, I unfortunately early in my marriage, when I was having success at work, I was moving up the corporate ladder. I'm a civil engineer by degree. I was basically kind of knocking on leadership. Hey, get me into new opportunities. I want to go. I want to basically move. And they did. They were doing the best they could. They put me in this leadership program where I was a couple decades younger, the youngest in there. I was in my 20s and most everyone else in there was in 40s. And so, they were trying. And so even though I was getting these wins at work, it wasn't enough. And then so I would take these, my identity to work. That's not fulfilling. So then I was taking my identity of who I am as a man, my value, my worth to my wife. That's unfair to any other human to try to answer identity questions for, one broken person can't answer another broken person's, issues on identity. So when that didn't work, I then went and had an affair. I thought, hey, that'll solve my problems. Well, obviously that we know that doesn't work. And so in that, having the affair and the whole learnings from that, there's a whole bunch, but I'm just on a huge mission now to help others not take their identity to work. It's not about the corner office. It's not about the salary. It's not about the job title, because when that stuff goes away, you can't allow your identity to go away. You can't put your identity in being an amazing husband. You can't, or amazing father or wife or mother, because those things can change too. What happens when the kids go off to college? And you're now an empty nester. I experience that a lot with the clients I work with, that they start to struggle. And so obviously the affair was absolutely awful and, a jerk for having it. But I also, through the process, learned about identity more than I ever knew. And so that in fact, obviously was a benefit. I did come clean in my affair a few years later, which was another pivotal moment when I lived in Denver. And I started spending time with Christian guys who were vulnerable and open. I'd always been exposed to Christian guys who were perfect on the outside. Marriage is great. Career's great. Life, it's up and to the right. All good every day. And so I obviously, having the skeleton in my closet and just other insecurities or thoughts, I'm like, hey, my life's maybe not perfect. So I started spending time with great guys in Denver at the church we went to, and heard, hey, they got in arguments with their wife, or they don't know if they love their job, or just all these different things that everybody deals with from time to time. And so to hear that, God started softening my heart, and then I ended up coming clean of my affair while I lived in Denver, a pivotal moment that I talk about the intro chapter of the book, where I just, I heard this, what felt like audible to me is, you need to come clean of your affair. And obviously that became an argument between me and God, but eventually I heard, you need to hand over your story for a greater story. And at the time I didn't know what that meant. I kind of thought maybe what it meant, but I know what it means now. By me being vulnerable, being open, sharing my testimony, it's all to help move others forward. I wrote the book Win at Home First because I lost at home. And I don't want any other leader out there to lose at work or lose at home. And so that's why I wrote the book. That's why I share stories like this on the podcast and conversations, is because I don't want others to have that fall. But at the same time, if you do, you're not defined by it. One of the biggest challenges I had was forgiving myself. My wife forgave me pretty darn fast, thanks to the Holy Spirit telling her it's going to be okay.
Wow. Yeah.
But forgiving myself took a long time. It's like, how can I be a good Christian man if I did that? How can I be a good husband if I did that? How can I just be a good man? You know, now who's going to believe me, or do I have no credibility, or whatever it may be? Like, that took forever to forgive myself. And then finally I did. And that was amazing freedom. And so that was a big piece. And then another one, I mean, I got a few more, but I think another one was just transitioning. I'm civil engineer by degree. I had a 20-year career in corporate. Civil engineer, sales. So I sold, you know, real sexy stuff like storm sewers and sanitary sewer and bridges. But it was a great career. I absolutely loved it. But at one moment, I moved to Cincinnati where I live now. I was kind of getting in over my head. I had just been, I was a VP of a $120 million division. I was managing people older than me. I leapfrogged my boss. I was now managing him. And so what happened was I was starting to almost take my identity back to work again, just like I did in my early 20s. But this time I was like, I know where this goes. And I think we all know that the devil will tempt us the same way he's done in the past because he knows it works. And if he does it enough and frequent enough, we're eventually, if we aren't prepared and we're not, you know, reading scripture every day and we're not praying, we're going to fall again. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I can't do it. I got to do something different. So I called my boss, who I loved, and I learned a ton from him, but we just were traveling different directions in the country every week. And so I just said, hey, you know, what do I do? I need some help. I love your time, but I don't get it enough. And he's like, get an executive coach. I always had one. So I actually did. I hired an executive coach about 9 years ago. And it's the same. I've hired a few coaches along the way, but I've had the same one this all 9 years. And it changed my life. And I know that sounds so extreme, but it really did, because one, it changed my career because that's not what I do. But it also just changed. It gave me tools. It gave me concepts, perspective, change, like all this, and faith-based. So I was the VP of that division for a while. I then took one more corporate move where I was president of sales for a national contractor. And I started to use the tools that I was using on myself, and it was helping. I was becoming a better father, husband, leader. When I worked on with these 30 people that reported to me when I was president of sales, and it worked for them, and profitability and EBITDA improved for the company, I was like, I want to do this for a living. Like, this is amazing. That's sweet. And so if it helps me, it helps these 30, let's go, you know, 30, you know, 3,000, 30,000, you know, 3 million, whatever it may go to. And so then I left. I began the process of leaving that corporate career. There's a whole bunch of stories there, along with identity, because, you know, I had my identity tied to a big salary again, you know, president of sales, to all of a sudden become bottom floor, starting a coaching, you know, business, and with three kids and all those stresses, and the devil trying to say you're on your own.
Yeah.
And all that, like, life coming full circle. I mean, so anyways, I made the jump, and now that's what I do. I get to write, speak, and coach for a living, and just trying to help leaders win at work and win at home.
Hey guys, this is Mike Hatch, and if you are a pastor or a men's ministry leader and you're looking for a discipleship curriculum that is both affordable and accessible, I'd love to tell you more about CLC's newest curriculum line called Getting Real, a small group guide to spiritual authenticity. This study is designed for groups of 5 to 8 men meeting weekly to get real about life's victories and struggles. It's divided into 3 sessions of 12 weeks each that cover the nature of God, daily living, and the big picture. I recently started 2 Getting Real groups myself, and the $50 price tag, as well as the 12-week commitment, made it much easier and accessible for guys to want to jump in. This is the perfect study for guys who maybe have never been in a group before. And don't worry, this study still contains all the amazing things that make a CLC study a CLC study, like fence post stories, scripture memorization, and affirmation experiences. You can find out more about this study at our website at clchq.org, or shoot me an email at mhatch@clchq.org. I'd love to talk to you about the study and how to integrate it into your own church's discipleship strategy. That's all for now, so let's get back to the interview.
And Corey, I didn't want to interrupt you, so I didn't. But there were a couple of things you said that really sparked some questions for me. So one of them was when you went to Denver and you said that you found a group of men, Christian men, that were real, that were authentic, that you could talk with. How'd you do that? Because I think that's a struggle. It's always been my struggle, right? I mean, it wasn't until I got into CLC that I finally started opening up with men and found men who were vulnerable that would open up to me. So how'd that happen for you? How did you find this group of men? Because before that, you said that, you know, every Christian man seemed to have it all together, which was exactly the same experience I had. Mm-hmm. So what changed in Denver? How did you find that group of men?
Yeah, so we got transferred from Kansas City to Denver. And so we moved to Denver. And, you know, my wife just started asking, hey, we need to start going to church. Like,
yeah.
And I didn't want to go to church because I had, you know, skeletons in the closet.
Right.
And I didn't want to sit there and, I mean, feel like a hypocrite. I just didn't want to do it. But you know, she'd bring it up and it's like, oh, no, I need to go. I mean, I told her I was a Christian guy. I used to do Young Life and Campus Crusade. And
right.
I was a good man at one time.
Right.
I mean, I think overall I still was a good man. I just didn't really want to basically get that close to the fire.
Right.
I said yes. And we went to an awesome church, our Vada Vineyards, changed his name now to Mile High Vineyard. Went there and man, God, as he always does, just started working pretty fast right away. The couple people who came up quickly in the lobby, whether it was that first day or maybe second, they just good connection, good chemistry right away. Mm-hmm. And so that's just how it happened. And then started to, you know, go out with some of those guys, go have, you know, meet up for beers or mm-hmm. food or whatever it may be. And it just kind of started happening and snowball. And these were just gifted men from the standpoint. They were able to ask those pointed questions, but yet share their vulnerability in the process, like kind of just start unwrapping a little bit, just kind of like how this conversation is, but I really hadn't been involved in those before.
Right.
And that's kind of just how it started to happen. And then in the process, they'd share their own things. It could be whatever it is, you know, porn or, you know, wives or parenting's hard or need to get to the gym. But it was cool, deep conversations that weren't just about weather, sports, and stocks.
Right, right.
That's awesome. It sounds to me like that church probably has that, I don't know, that personality. If you're able to just, if it kind of just enveloped you in a sense and kind of pulled you in, it sounds like that church probably has something going on.
Yeah, some of those key leaders are just, that's how they roll. They just ask those pointed question and do it. Discipleship's a big part. It's not.
That's great.
And that is of some other church as well. But yeah, that was for sure. And so it started working. And then Holly and I started volunteering at the church, getting involved in kids club, which, I love my kids, but it's hard to watch other kids, especially when you're tired from work all week. But we did it. But what ended up happening, and kind of anytime you go to a church and you're an outgoing, high charisma guy, they want to invite you into more. Mm-hmm. But knowing that, the leadership of that says, hey, we're gonna figure out these volunteers, but we're going to send them through a program. Mm. Like, we're going to equip them. And I don't know if it was the first class. I got invited to take this leadership program through them. It basically is for volunteers and who were going to be involved, but they basically want to make sure the foundation was strong of their volunteers. So I can't remember if it was the first night of the class or the second, but it was quick. And so the program was called Equip, and that night was on character. And I remember Jay, the pastor, saying, hey, we want to make sure everybody's good in here. You guys are volunteers. You're active in the community, and we want to make sure you guys are good too. And we can't have a slip up by our volunteers that affects the whole body.
Right.
Just like our own leadership. Our own leadership's gone through this program, but we want to make sure. So that was the night. That was the night that he's talking on character, and I'm taking notes because I loved when Jay talked. He's full of wisdom. And so I was taking all kind of notes of things he was talking about. Then all of a sudden, like out of left field, was you need to come clean of your affairs, what I heard, as I said earlier. Wow. But that's – and I don't know what I look like in that sitting in that chair. Jay's still talking. There's still stuff in the room, but I'm having my own battle,
right,
in that moment. And so I have no idea what I look like, but that's when it all happened. So, but it was a gradual process, right? Starting to go to church, starting to get involved with men who actually cared. Started, you know, kind of pulling me along. And then eventually it led to that evening. And then another part of this, for anyone who is listening and has came clean of an affair or any other sin for that matter, right after it happened, they came right around me again in a loving way and said, let's go. I mean, let's figure this out together.
Right.
And that was a huge part, because I think any of us who have dealt with this sin, we want isolation. Well, I mean, the devil wants us to be isolated because the lone wolf gets taken out. So if I didn't have community leading up to the moment, I probably never would have came clean. Then if I didn't have community afterwards, I probably would just would have, who knows, fell in depression, you know, screw you, God, that I did this. I thought it was going to work out, but it's not worked out at all. Who knows what I would have done.
Right.
But because I had community who quickly rallied around me, and Holly had community quickly rallied around her. That's what saved us.
It's huge.
And we started growing individually closer to God, as a couple closer to God. And then it just has began, you know, continued on. And
that's beautiful. Real quick, just because I know we've got listeners in Denver, what's the name of the church?
Mile High Vineyard. The pastor is Jay Pathak. Okay. And he's awesome.
Yeah.
Love. And there's just a great team of leaders there. And obviously we moved from there 10 years ago. So some of them have came and gone, and I'm sure there's new people there that are just as amazing. But Mile High, I mean, I think they got like 4 locations there.
Okay.
Now
that's great. Could be a church guys want to check out if they're in that area. I know we've got CLC actually starting in the Denver area too. So I know there are guys out there that could be listening to us right now. So thank you so much, like Chris said, for your story, because I just think of, and this is my passage of scripture, if you will, that has defined my story, is 1 John 1, is if we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship with one another, and the blood of Jesus, his son, purifies us from all unrighteousness. So when you step into the light and you tell the truth about who you are and acknowledge the truth of who God is, we get to have true fellowship with one another, because we get to know each other at a deeper level. But then also that's an act of faith. You have to trust God to step out and reveal yourself in some way. And through that act of faith, the Holy Spirit purifies us. And so thank you for sharing that story. And I think it's going to be inspirational for other guys to possibly do the same.
And if it's a community of believers, then the reality is that every believer is screwed up, not just once, but multiple times in multiple ways. So sounds like you were in a real community of believers who, like you said, they supported you, they rallied around you, and they, I mean, they probably admonished you in some respects, but then they helped you move forward, and your wife move forward, and the two of you move forward together. So that's great.
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned people being broken. You know, what I do now for a living, and part of it's executive coaching, and I'll do it in groups or one-on-one. And so, I mean, all the time it will happen. I'll have a client on there. It's usually Zoom. I mean, it was even Zoom before COVID,
right?
doing Zoom, and they'll start sharing something of frustration, they have a brokenness. And majority of my clients are faith-based, but not all of them are. Some I can't even talk about it. But anyways, it'll still be shared that, and they'll make a comment. I bet you I'm the only one that says this. Mm-hmm. I bet this is the only time
you've ever heard this. No way.
Yeah.
And I will be like, not at all. I hear it all the time. And if anyone listening is, anything you're thinking about at this moment that you're broken in, somebody else is, if not everyone else is. It is unbelievable. And I used to, when I first started coaching others, I'd be so timid and scared when, the president of this company, I'm gonna be coaching them. I'm scared. And I still get a little nervous. I remember a quote Michael Jordan had before a game. They asked him, do you get nervous before games? And he goes, yes, because once I don't get nervous, that means I don't care anymore.
Right.
So I still will get nervous, but I'm not timid and scared because I know the person on the other side, like me, has their brokenness.
Yeah.
And so for any listener, just know that you're not alone. Everyone is broken, no matter how fancy their car is, how big their house is, whatever their job title is, they got baggage just like you.
I want to get into the book, but I have another question that came up in my mind when you were sharing your fence post story, and you just hit it on it again, which is the coaching world. You said you got an executive coach 9 years ago when you were kind of at a crossroads in your career, trying to figure out, you know, how to have that balance. And it's worked out tremendously well for you, as it does for a lot of people. But I have coached people in sports, and I've mentored entrepreneurs for a couple of years. And I have found that a lot of people are not very coachable. So what made you coachable? I mean, you decided to get an executive coach. What made you coachable at that time? And as you've been coaching people, what makes people coachable?
That's a great question, Chris.
That is a great question. I think there's a few things that I noticed that to become coachable is I started to kind of look around, or I'd read, or I'd hear that someone had a coach, or I think it's like Ray Dalio has had like Tony Robbins coach him for like 30 years or you know, something unbelievable. But at that moment when I was kind of looking around, like, do I want a coach? Do I need it? I found out that others had coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that moment, I knew my boss said he had a coach, and I thought he was a stud. And I'm like, oh, wait, he's got a coach? And then I'd read books, and I can't remember some of the other people I was thinking about 10 years ago, but they all had coaches.
Right.
And then you fast forward to like right now in modern day, well, you know, you got guys like LeBron James that have, who's, you know, maybe one of the best players right now in the NBA. He's got coaches for everything.
Right.
He's got a nutrition coach. He's got a basketball coach. You know, he's in, and so you see that happen. And it just made me realize the greats out there have coaches.
Right.
And so I started to pay attention to that. And so that's one thing. I saw the outside world was using coaches. A lot of people keep their coach to a secret.
Right.
Because they don't want people to know. That's a whole nother world that helped my business and marketing if people just said they had coaches. But until then, we're going to have to go incognito. But I saw others had coaches.
Okay.
The other is I realized that old title of that book, What Got Me Here Won't Get Me There. I was starting to realize that on my own strength, on pulling up my own bootstraps, I was starting to hit a ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
There's only so many hours in the day I could work. There was... I also found, like, you know, before we hit recording, we were joking about books behind us.
Right.
What was happening at that time, Chris, I'd read books and listen to podcasts or whatever the media was. And one would say, do this square for leadership. Mm-hmm. You got to do the square. And then I'd go read the next book. It says, you've got to do this triangle. It's the best. Mm-hmm. And then the next book says, the circle will get your team to the next level.
Right.
I would not implement any of them because it's like, well, I thought the square, or wait, the triangle. And so I remember getting a coach, and like one of the first things is like, do I do the square, the triangle, the circle? What are we going to do? And he's like, well, they all work. We're doing the square.
Right.
Okay, great. Let's go. And it was just that outside perspective and then that accountability to help me get around, using that example of the square, making sure I'm using the square with my team. So that was a big piece. So I realized others had coaches, and I realized I needed help. Now, fast forward to now, when I have my clients or when I'm talking to them, I pretty much ask out of the gates, or I try to figure, I need two things. Are you hungry to grow? Like, we got to implement stuff along the way. And then are you humble, you know, to hear counsel from me, for your other buddies, from your spouse? If you go talk to her and, hey, what are ways I could be a better husband? Talk to your kids. What are ways I could be a better father? So I can ask some questions in those kind of interviews leading up to it, or times where I'm coffee or a beer before we, you know, kind of say yes, I can get a sense. But if they're not hungry and humble, I honestly just don't want to work with them because it's too hard.
Yep. Humility is a big deal. I think I agree with you. And I use a lot of sports analogies, but you know, I played tennis pretty much my whole life, and I'm a competitive tennis player. try as I might, I cannot see myself play tennis. I'm inside my own body. I can't see what I'm doing, right? I can record myself. I can put a camera back there, but I really need somebody watching me with that outside perspective because I can't see it, right? I can feel it, but I can't see it. And like you said, I mean, LeBron James, Djokovic, Nadal, all the great ones have multiple coaches and they're every aspect of, you know, well, I see this, I see this. They're all seeing different perspectives and they're all bringing that to the athlete so he can be or she can be the best athlete possible. And yet a lot of people are reluctant in their own lives to get that outside perspective. I think they're afraid to be vulnerable. They're afraid to have somebody say, yeah, you're messing up here. You need to change this.
Yep. And yeah, they won't change. They won't get better. About 2 years ago, I hired another coach to help me grow and, you know, grow the business, help me just think a little bit bigger and different. And he said, hey, here's one of your first assignments. I want you to interview all your clients you have and ask them why they work with you.
Oh, good.
Okay, great. That's easy. I'll do that. So I reached out to all of them and they were all so kind and talked with me. And all of them either said both of these answers or one of the answers. And then the other one kind of followed in number three or number four. And it was outside perspective and accountability. And I shouldn't have been, but I was shocked. I was like, wait, what about the faith piece I bring? Oh, I think I'm doing a little bit better in my quiet time. What about the whole kind of winning at home first? Well, I'm probably going on more dates with my wife. You know, what about the leadership tools? Yeah, they've kind of been helpful, but at the end of the day, it's outside perspective because leadership is lonely at the top.
Yeah.
And people want to talk about, you know, maybe it's their boss, maybe it's their business partner. Maybe it's just they got a big meeting on Friday and they just want to bounce it off of someone. You can't talk to your peers because you don't want to look, you know, incompetent.
Right.
And then, so that's outside perspective. And then the accountability piece is we all of us take the path of least resistance if we can.
Yep.
And if it's not moving forward, then, but if I know I've got to talk to my coach on Thursday, well, I better make those phone calls I said I would. I better get to the gym like I said I would. Whatever it could be. So you're right, Chris. I mean, those are the two things that became the most popular of why they keep coming back. So
yeah, very good.
That is the coolest thing, man. Oh my gosh. I hope by now, like, again, I'm thinking of those guys, you know, driving their, I don't know, Lexus, Tesla, Chevy, whatever it is, but they're driving right now. They're listening to this and they're like, holy cow, I think I might want to coach. The way you just described that, because I think more people than not could use one, especially guys. But and we'll have more information, by the way, at the end of the podcast about Corey and how you get in touch with him.
And a coach also is just a season. I think that's another thing that I struggle with in the beginning is like, oh, I'm going to be married to this person for the rest of my life.
Right, no. Right.
You know, 3 months, 6 months, just try it. And then if it works, great. And then I have, you know... I had a writing coach for my first book. I hired a podcast coach for my podcast. I've been in different masterminds where I'm a student and learning. I'm in one right now with the great Christian author that I like, Jordan Rayner. Last year, I was one with John Gordon, where it's just like I'm trying to soak up information. So just try stuff. I mean, and it's just fun to learn new content and grow. I mean. The best investment is in yourself because you show up better as a father, as a husband, as a leader, and
I'm so glad you said that, Corey, because men by nature we isolate. We want to look like we have it all together. We hesitate to reach out for help or look for people to help. And we need it. We need it. We're weak. Each one of us is weak. And anyway, so thank you for saying that. All right. So let's talk about your book, Win at Home First, An Inspirational Guide to Work-Life Balance. Got it right that time. And one of the first things that stuck out to me about the book was how you have it organized, right up front. Part one, focusing on you. Part two, your marriage. Part three, parenting. And then part four is work. And I know, obviously, there's real intentionality with how you organize it. And it's already become somewhat clear as you've been sharing your own story and your own process. But let's start first and foremost, though, with what was your impetus for writing the book And why did you organize it this way?
Reason I wrote the book, I never thought I'd write a book. I mean, there were a few times in some quiet times where I kind of felt this nudge, hey, you should write a book. You know, put your story in a book. And I was like, I pushed back. I was like, no way. I'm not a writer. I'm a civil engineer by degree. I'm kind of a sales guy by heart. Like, that's not me. I'm not a writer. I actually, my worst classes in school were writing. I'm more of a math guy. So it just, I had all these reasons I don't want to do it. And so that's kind of how I was basically posturing myself in the standpoint. It also seemed like a lot of work, and I wasn't really up for a lot of work because I didn't know what the outcome was going to be, which I know we can all relate to those things. We don't want to start something if it's going to fail, and we don't, you know. Well, that was going on in my quiet time. I was starting to think about it. I think I had maybe written, I was writing some blogs and just kind of dabbling with some stuff because I knew I need to get some things out there to be a thought leader, or at least help build in that direction. In over a 2-week span, I think almost every client said, you know what? You should write a book. You should put your story in a book. You should. And it was like, I just, the kind of that laugh of, all right, God, I'm sorry I ignored you. I see we've got some others on your team that are talking to me. And so I began the process of writing the book. And it was a hard process. For anyone who's written a book knows that. If anyone's thinking about doing it is a hard process. But man, it's good. It is good. And before I sent my book to be published, a buddy of mine, he sent me this long email. And we're good friends. And he's also been a client this whole journey, but he just sent me that the sales, all that, it doesn't matter. Like, you being obedient and writing the book and putting yourself out there and sharing your story is what this is all about. And I mean, obviously he sent that letter because he was prompted to do it. But I think for anyone thinking about starting a podcast, starting a book, writing a book, starting a business, whatever it is, I think if it's a nudge from God to do, it's about the obedience. There's a phrase I've really been saying to myself these last 2 years is we control the input. I control the input. God controls the impact. So I know I need to continue to show up, write, be intentional with all my clients, be intentional and present on these, on this podcast. And we'll see where God takes it, whatever it may be. And it's up to him. And the old me used to get worked up on the impact. That social media post did awful. No one listened to this podcast episode. And I got so hung up on the impact, and that's exhausting. And I'm not going to lie, I still can. I'm a numbers guy. I want to see, what's revenue. I do want to see those things. But man, it's that posture and mindset. So that's kind of a little bit about how the pieces of the book. Why I ordered it in that way, as you mentioned, you, then marriage and parenting, then work, is I believe that's the most important order it needs to be. And so often we can get that upside down at different times. The easy one is obviously, hey, work is my number one. What happens when work changes? About 5.5 years ago, I was terminated from that president of sales job because we were owned by a private equity group. We tried to be sold. We actually signed a letter of intent with another private equity company. They, during their due diligence period, about the 45th day, they backed out. They just didn't like it anymore. Once that happens, well, you're known as a retrade and no one wants you. And you call the second bidder and say, hey, we're back on the market. I'll buy you for 50% what my offer was. Whatever they found, it's going to scare me too, more than likely. So anyways, private equity group made this decision to shrink it all back. And, if you get rid of a bunch of territories, you eventually don't need a president of sales. Well, if my identity would have been tied to the work and all I cared about was work, well, then I would have been, just mentally destroyed. But my identity wasn't tied to that anymore. You know, and some people can do that with parenting about their kids. Yeah, they are a good Christian man if they've got good Christian kids. If I got good kids on the honor roll and they're starters on the team and they're going to Sunday school every day, or not every day, that'd be amazing. I barely can get my kids to do a devotion each day. But anyways, what happens if the kid goes off the rails? You know, what happens if they get distracted? So it just, you start to see how that all plays out.
Yeah.
So it starts with you. And in that piece, the you is got the five capitals framework, which is just an idea of, hey, how to live your life of in a particular order. And it's just that overall thing that we all know about on an airplane. You've got to give yourself oxygen before you give somebody else oxygen. Mm-hmm. And so in that you piece, it does provide some frameworks that are helpful. I also talk about head trash. We all carry around this head trash, this mental baggage. I'm not good enough, or because I had an affair, I'll never be a good husband again, or because this business failed, I can never be a successful businessman. Whatever that head trash is, we carry it around. So I address that. I address different temptations. You know, the idea that the devil comes at us with three simple temptations, and he still uses those same simple tricks today as he did with Jesus in the wilderness. Mm. So that's part one, is really kind of setting us up individually and preparing us so that we can go out and lead our families and our work teams well. Then it flows into marriage. And you know, is that next piece is we've got to make our marriage strong, because when Holly and I are doing good, I can be my best at work because I know home is good.
Amen.
But if I leave home and we have a 7 a.m. argument, at 9 a.m., I am thinking about, oh, I should have said that. So instead of my meeting being present, I'm sitting, I should have said that. Oh, man, next time I'm going to say this. And then all day long, we're kind of coming in and out of that thought. But definitely, again, at 3, 4 o'clock, when we're about ready to go home, we think, oh, I got to walk back into that conversation.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say this. Well, if she does this, I'm doing that. And we just, that's what happens. So marriage is so strong because if we've got a supportive marriage, we're serving each other. I talk a lot to guys about dating your wives. That's a whole nother piece. But if you don't get anything out of this podcast, please date your wife.
Amen. Preach it.
And so, but that idea, you have a strong marriage, you can go do more because it's good at home. And then next is the kids, and talk about just different items on parenting and being both fun with your kids, but also being a disciplinarian.
Yeah.
Consequences are good.
Yeah.
But so is fun. And so it's that balance of truth and grace at home. So we talk about that, and then we go into work. And I think a big piece of work that has been a part of, for me, but even as I share with other leaders, is we think work is all on us. And I've talked about that at the very beginning of this podcast, where it's all on me, that idea. But a lot of people do too much work because they don't delegate, because they don't want to release control. They're too busy working because they got to send out another email, find another prospect. I need one more social media connection. I need more. And we just never have this thought that, hey, God's in control. You know, Psalm 127, 1 and 2 is basically the God's got the night shift. You've got to realize, you know, the one that gets up and labors is laboring in vain. You know, it's the idea of that verse. And it's, we just got it. And so that's a big piece in the last section on work is, hey, how do you start releasing a little bit of work? So those are the four sections. It's a fun book to write. It's been fun to talk about. Yeah. And thankfully, a guy at Forbes magazine says top one of 7 books everyone on your team should read. So that was a fun surprise. Sweet. I got one random day about a year ago or so.
That's excellent.
Yeah, it was fun. And in his write-up, he said nothing about God or faith in it. So someone got that book off his recommendation and is mad.
Right. That's fantastic.
What is this, man? That's Jesus fantastic. In here.
So, okay, real quick, because there is a, first of all, I love how you you describe when you're talking about you, I want to go back to you for a moment, and specifically the spiritual aspect, but you describe the capitals, the five capitals, spiritual capital, relational capital, physical capital, intellectual capital, and financial capital. And I love that because, especially for a guy who's myself, who has kind of a more of an entrepreneurial bent, capital is, oh, I love that word because it's, there's so much meaning in it. And I know guys in business probably love it, but focusing on the spiritual capital for a second, you have this, kind of diagram that I think is super helpful for guys. And I'll just kind of try to visually explain it. And then, and I'd love for you to kind of expand a little bit if you would, but, it's the hearing and doing matrix is what you call it. And so you've got, you know, the vertical, up and down being how, you know, hearing, which looks like leads to humility because you have to be humble to be willing to lend yourself to submit to God and his will and to hear what he has to say to you. And then the horizontal, arrow is doing. And the further to the right you get, the more courage it takes to do that. But then you've got the quadrants, you know, on the top left, it's buddy. On the top right, it's builder. On the bottom left, it's blah. And on the bottom right, it's burnout. Okay. So the further you get to hearing God, but not doing anything, you're more like a buddy or God's like a buddy to you. The further you get to doing and up into the hearing, you combine the two, you become more of a builder. The less you listen to God, the less you do, you're talking blah, basically. And then on the bottom right, the less you hear from God, but the more you do, you lead to burnout. So, actually, if we could expand a little bit on the builder aspect of that.
That's an awesome four quadrant thing. That yeah. I just wrote that down as you were describing it. That if you're in your car, don't do that. But
yeah, that's right.
No, it is an amazing quadrant, and I can say that because I didn't create it. It was created by Five Capitals, which is, you know, who was my coach and, you know, who I, you know, coach through now. We have actually a bazillion of those matrices that are just fantastic, that are helpful in a lot of different ways. Some I actually use another one in the book in regard to both parenting and employees, kind of that invitation versus challenge, truth versus grace. But as far as the hearing doing one, you know, it's based off the idea of, you know, at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, basically it's Matthew 5-7. So he says all these different things that so many of us know about, and it's, you know, giving to the need and all the Beatitudes. I mean, there's a lot from Matthew 5-7, but he ends with the wise builder, which is what this is based off. So basically this idea of, hey, if Jesus has all this important stuff to say through 5-7, but his conclusion is here. Well, let's look at it. Let's zoom in on it. And that's exactly what this is about is, you know, we have to have the humility to hear God's voice, but then we have to have the courage to take action and do it.
Yep.
And so in that top right, it is hearing that nudge, you know, making time to hear whatever that could be. And first and foremost, I don't want to sound almighty. Like, I've heard from God all the time and I've had the courage to go do it. No way. I know there's been things I've heard that I didn't have the guts to do it. And so I didn't do it. So I don't want anyone to think that I've heard everything and done everything and that's why I'm here. Not at all. But there were a few nudges I heard about that I went and did. And they could be as big as coming clean as my affair. They also could be praying for a kid, praying for one of your kids, writing a letter to one of your kids to give them a note of encouragement, telling your spouse you're sorry.
Ugh. Come on, wait, you got to draw the line somewhere. That's right. Pushing it.
That's right.
No, that's right.
All those things, good. You know. Forgiving someone, a coworker, swallowing your pride and collaborating. These are all nudges that we've all heard in quiet time when we're driving in the car or reading scripture, that something happens. So these don't have to be, you know, mountaintop experiences. They could be tabletop. And so in that, you're going to hear all these different things. And you may have heard some things, as I've said, like date your spouse. I mean, there's something that has been said that God has actually given a little extra oomph in your life versus the other listener. Whatever that is, now you just have to have courage to do it. And so go do it. And that's how you hang out in that builder category. And so we are called to be wise builders of our families, wise builders of businesses, wise builders of communities. And the only way we're going to be able to build is if we are hearing from God and then doing as he says. It's one step at a time, right? As David says, a lamp upon my feet.
That's
right. We all know if God gave us the 3-year plan, and here's the strategy, we'd say, adios, God, see you in 3 years for the update. But no, it's a play by play.
And accountability is so important there. I mean, you mentioned earlier that when you ask people why they have you as a coach, you know, mm-hmm. there were two reasons, and accountability was the second one. And I think that we as men know that we need accountability, but we really don't want to put ourselves in a position where we have to have it, but we have to have it. And whether it's with a coach or with your wife or with another man, it's so beneficial to have that, because right, now right. you're hearing God's telling you to do something. You know you should do it, but if you tell somebody else, then they're going to hold you accountable.
Yeah,
and then you'll get it done. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and you can put goals on paper. Like I've got this some things I review throughout the week, and like this is a dashboard that I've built for clients that I use based on the five capitals. It's got a few other things. I could put all these things I want to do down.
Yep.
On paper in January, you know, February, beginning of the year or beginning of a quarter. Like these are all the things I want to do. Hmm. But if I don't have that accountability, it's so much easier to let it slip because it's hard.
Yep.
They aren't goals and aspirational things because they're easy. Hmm. We put them out there because they're hard to get to. And if you think you can do it all by yourself, great, go for it. Best of luck. But if you want, you know, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go with others.
Mm.
So go with others. And if that is a small group of church, if that is some good buddies, if that's a coach, if that's a mentor, whatever it is for you, get something.
Yep.
Amen.
That's great.
All right, Corey, man, time has flown by. This has been fantastic. So if folks want to reach out to you, if they want to connect with you, how do they do that? I know you've got a website. Now you've got a podcast as well, which is really exciting. So we'll want to promote that. But yeah, what are some ways folks can connect with you?
Easiest way is the website, CoreyMCarlson.com. M as in Michael. Right there, you see everything I got going on. Sign up for a weekly email I send out to leaders and just share helpful tools that are helping me and helping clients. When at work, when at home, in there, you can see stuff about the podcast. When at Home First is the name of the podcast where we interview business leaders. And this is what we, you know, talk about home and work. Mm-hmm. And then of all social media platforms, LinkedIn is probably the one that I am most active, enjoy the most. I believe it's exactly how you and I met.
That's right. That's right.
Those are the best spots, and love to talk to anyone who about anything I've said today that could be of value to you.
That's great. Great. Corey Carlson, man, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you guys very, very much for letting me share my story with your audience.